This is an iHeart podcast.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? My drink was, give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is The Jesse Kelly Show.
Well, this whole Biden thing is not working. I have some audio from Joe Biden from yesterday. I don't know what to tell you. We're going to laugh. I promise we're going to play it really, really soon. We're going to laugh. You and I, we're going to laugh together. But then we got to have a serious chat. We're going to have a real serious chat. We're going to talk about the GOP some more. We're going to talk about my reoccurring nightmare. We got an email from a SWAT guy about it. And lies you tell your children and lies your parents told you. That's going to be fun this week. All that's today on the Jesse Kelly Show. But first, it's time to go to China. No, not modern dirtball communist China. We're talking about Song Dynasty China. Song Dynasty started in the year 960. And I will say this. While I'm not made of money, I travel as much as humanly possible. I don't have expensive vices. That's nothing I did well. I just don't like many things, which works out well because I don't have expensive vices. I don't like fancy cars. Fancy jewels, fancy this, fancy that. I'm not hooked on cocaine. I'm not even a gambler. I mean, like I said, I'll bet $20 on a game. I don't have something against it, but I'm just not a big gambler. I don't have expensive vices. My vices are food. Don't mind a little bourbon now and then. And that's pretty much it. I'm a simple man. But I do, because of my absurd love of history, love world travel. I love world travel. I've traveled to Europe once. I've been to Mexico a couple times, Canada a couple times. But if I had my way, it's one of those things, if you had $1 million, what would you do? If I had all the money I could, I would travel everywhere and see all the sights. And if I could set aside political motivations, China would probably be my number one destination. Now, I will never go there. I refuse to give a penny to dirtball communists. I will not do it. But if they weren't that, I would just go spend a couple months in China. Chinese history is so fascinating because there's so much of it. Just any point in history, really. China is there with some mega powerful dynasty, with advanced technology, beautiful palaces, and they're just very much there. But China had a problem. Now, to their credit, they were aware they had this problem, but their problem was the fierce nomadic steppe tribes, the Asian steppe. Remember that if you draw a big wide strip through the center of Asia, going from east to west, that's considered the steppe. freezing, barren, desert. It's just all the worst environments wrapped up in one. There were all these nomadic people who came from that area. People you would know the names of. The Huns. The Scythians. The Mongols. China was constantly dealing with these people. And they always understood these people are fierce. You really don't want to face them in combat. These horse archers are just, you can't get a handle on them. They eat, sleep, and breathe combat. The only advantage we have is they're always fighting each other. Always. And look, a lot of warrior-like people really struggled with this. Big time. You know that saying, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail? People like to do whatever it is they're good at. It's just human nature. Remember what I've told you before about hanging out with stand-up comedians? Don't do it. Why? I've done it. They're always on. Always trying to be funny guy. Always trying out new jokes, new material. Isn't that funny? Actually, no. I want you to shut up. Same thing with warrior-like people. They're going to fight. They fight each other. China knew that. China was always wary of it. They did whatever they could to keep them away. But eventually a man rose. Perhaps you've heard of him. His name was Genghis Khan. Yes, I know, Chris. I know. I'm just now telling you all about him. And he took these people, the Mongols, and united them all. And then grabbed a bunch of other Asian steppe tribes and either united them or killed them to the last man. And Genghis Khan had a real axe to grind with China. Now, China in the time of Genghis Khan was not one dynasty. It wasn't one king of China. They were all split up. There were some people in the north, the Jurchens. There were some people in the west. And there was the southern dynasty, the Song dynasty. Here's what you need to know for our story. Genghis Khan is dead by the time we get to our story. He has already taken the north. He has already taken the west. We are a couple generations past Genghis Khan, and here's how that went. Genghis Khan takes all this territory, takes a lot of China, takes Persia, essentially takes the Middle East, pokes his nose into Europe a little bit and slaps around a bunch of European knights, dies, and then we have a succession problem. Not right after Genghis, but soon after. It goes down to his son, Ogadai. And then before you know it, all these Mongols seem to drink themselves to death. There was apparently nobody was there to monitor the situation. And who's going to tell Genghis Khan to put down the booze? But eventually they get into a succession problem. Prior to the succession problem, when they're still beating up the Chinese, the Mongols do, as the Mongols often did, go knock on the door of the Song dynasty and say, hey, we have a problem with these Chinese guys over here. You have a problem with these Chinese guys over here. Because remember, the Chinese dynasties were often fighting each other. Let us come through your territory without getting in our way, and it'll work out for everybody. Now, the Mongols, to their credit, didn't walk in and have that meeting and promise the moon and stars. They just said, it's probably in your best interest to let us come through. Now, this is my big issue with the Song dynasty in this story, among other things. How much do I lecture you and lecture myself about the nature of communists, how they don't stop, they'll never stop, they'll destroy it all, they'll take it all, that's the nature of communists. If you're the Song dynasty, you are intimately aware of the Mongols by now. This is two generations past Genghis Khan. You know what you're dealing with here. What are they going to take? Everything. That's what the Mongols do. If you're the Song, how do you not take a stand in this moment and say, no, you can't come through. We're going to unite. But old habits die hard. The Song wanted rid of their Chinese enemies, so they said to the Mongols, yeah, come on through. No problem. The Mongols do come through. The Mongols knock out the Sung's enemies. And now the Sung, man, come on, guys. Now the Sung, you see, these Chinese dynasties were very proud dynasties. And understandably proud. When you're putting out, when you're constantly churning out the most advanced, best civilizations on the planet, you're going to feel pretty good about yourself. You and I, in hindsight, would look at dealing with Mongols and say, whoa, just say, hey, guys, big fan, can I get your autograph? The Sung? Ah, they went a different route. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly.
It's not easy to quit dipping tobacco. Why? Well, speaking only for myself, it's fun to dip tobacco. I started when I was young. I was 17, 18 years old. Dipped all through the Marine Corps. Dipped for years after. And never got to a place where I hated it. There was never a moment where I pulled out that can of tobacco and thought, ew, this is gross. I mean, it is gross, but I never thought that. But I knew I had to quit. So when you love something like that, it's hard to quit. Jake's Mint Chew will help you. It is nicotine-free, tobacco-free. It's even sugar-free. Go with Jake's Mint Chew because it allows you to replace it with something healthy. I especially would try the CBD pouches. Go to jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Promo code Jesse for 20% off. Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Remember, I read all of your emails, all of them. I'm not going to respond. I get way too many, but I read them all. Send your love, your hate, your death threats, your Ask Dr. Jesse questions. I will get to a couple more of those today, if at all humanly possible. And I have one other thing I want to ask you before we get back to our story. You ready for this? It occurred to me last night as I was making my son's dinner. When I say making my son's dinner, it was a whirlwind night. We were all going nuts, me, the wife, the boys, and finally the kids are all, I'm hungry. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you have to eat. How about hot dogs? They said, sure. So I, like any great American, boiled the hot dogs because a boiled hot dog is superior to all other hot dogs. This is known. This is no. Don't, Chris. Don't. This is known. I boil the hot dogs. We sit down to eat. And they're like, well, Dad, this is good. I said, yeah. Your dad makes the best hot dogs in the world. At which point they rolled their eyes. They know who their dad is at this point. And it occurred to me. There was a time, for a long time, when my kids would believe all the lies I told them, and it was so fun. The Incredible Hulk. I told them I was the Incredible Hulk. I told them I was a Jedi, that I could move things with my mind. Now they don't believe any of that anymore. So I want to know, what lies have you told your kids? Or what lies did your parents tell you? 877-377-4373, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Back to our story. Before I get to your tax dollars going to San Francisco, the Sung Dynasty. They let the Mongols through. Mongols do some attacking of the Sung's enemies. Everything's going well. Woohoo! Then at the end of that war, instead of the Sung saying to the Mongols, hey guys, can we be friends now? The Sung go to the Mongols and they say, we need some lands. You just took some lands, and we want some of them back. These used to be our lands. And, of course, these are the Mongols. They were probably going to attack you anyway. The Mongols laugh in their faces and say, get out of here. Who are you? The Song, I should say, declare war. But the Song dynasty was interesting, and this is going to be applicable today. The Song dynasty wasn't militarily what China had been in the past. You see, they still had all kinds of money. The Chinese were generally outstanding when it comes to administration, when it comes to government. Obviously, that has gone the other way. But back in that day, they were pretty freaking good when it came to making sure their people were fed, watered, not overtaxing, not undertaxing, how to manage the various governments. They were just very, very good. But the Song had neglected to build up a military, a significant military. I don't mean they didn't have any, but they certainly didn't have one that could stand up to the Mongolian hordes. Not at all. And if you're going to get lippy, fellas, remember this, this applies to you. If you're going to get lippy with someone, as the saying goes, don't let your mouth write a check your butt can't cash. The Song, they were letting their mouths write a check their butts couldn't cash. They declared war. The Mongols come down and say, oh, okay, it's on now. But the Song get a little reprieve, and this is going to bring us to our battle today. Remember that whole always fighting each other thing? The Mongols, because of a succession problem, have a civil war of their own. A four-year-long civil war right at this point in time. They have to stop all this invasion of the Song dynasty thing and go have it out to see who's going to now lead the Mongolian Empire. And during this 4 years, by the way, it should be noted, Kublai Khan is the one who comes out this, the back end of it. But during this 4 years, the Song know the Mongols are coming back. They choose to fortify their cities, but still don't build up enough military strength. The historians think they don't have the manpower for it because they knew the Mongols were coming. They're storing up food and everything else. They just don't build up the military strength. But they do take the 4 years to prepare. Kublai Khan wins, and now he sets his sights on a place that I'm about to mispronounce, and I'm going to mispronounce it several times. Don't email me that my Mandarin is off. I am white trash. I am uneducated. I barely speak English. I know it's off. The city is called Shangyang, and it's an interesting place. I actually don't know what stands there today or how much of it stands, but there's a huge river in China called the Yangtze River. Again, I don't know if that's right either. Don't email me. Sue me. There's a huge river in China called the Yangtze River. Shangyang is on the mouth of it, on one side of the river. And they built almost a twin city called Fancheng on the other side of it. On my life, those are the last names I'm going to read you. When they get to Chinese names, I know names are bad enough to ruin a story. When you get to Chinese ones, it's going to kill you. Just know Shangyang and Fancheng. They're two twin cities on the mouth of the Yangtze River. The Mongols have to take these cities in order to travel up the Yangtze River and take down the Song Dynasty capital, because that's the goal. Take down the capital, eliminate the Song Dynasty. But Kublai, and I have always admired this about the Mongols, Genghis Khan was great about this too. They're so good. I mean, they talk about people who had every right to be arrogant, to have every right to look at their military and say, we've got things figured out. We really don't need any help from you. The Mongols never did that. They were constantly conquering people and absorbing every part of their military, every part, frankly, of their intelligence society into their own. Genghis Khan would slaughter whole cities and keep the artists, the engineers, the doctors. Oh, you have a skill that can help? And I don't. When I say keep, I don't mean throw them in chains. I mean be welcomed in. Oh, come on in. You're a Mongol now. The Mongols knew when they looked at southern China, this was not going to be a war fought on the plains, that they could do what they normally do, which is swarm you with horse archers and finish you off. This was going to be fought in rivers, marshes, jungle. They were going to have to do this differently. So what did they do? They found a guy who had defected from the Song Dynasty to lead their armies and put this man in charge of their armies. And one of the things he specialized in, the Mongols didn't, was a navy. He was an army and a navy man. And if you're going to be fighting on the Yangtze River, you better have some kind of naval capability. They storm in. They surround one of the twin cities. They surround Shangyang and dig in for a siege. And I would never have wanted to be in one. Not the city being besieged and not the one doing the sieging. Just because it looks so long and miserable and boring. These things go on. This war, this battle I'm about to describe for you went on for years, plural. It just looks miserable and boring. Disease comes, you're starving to death. But they surround Shangyang. But Shangyang had done something interesting. Something pretty cool in preparation for these Mongols to come. I'll tell you what that is, and I'll get to your phone calls and these stories. And we got Keira Davis talking about a handicap she has. Hang on. I hate eating healthy. I know that's not a surprise. I don't think there are people out there who love it, but I don't like vegetables. I don't like to do some of the things I should be doing to make sure my heart and my blood pressure stay where they need to be. I just don't enjoy them. Superbeats Heart Chews are one of the very few healthy things I do that I like. I eat two fruit snacks every night with dinner. That's it. It's not a chore. It's not some multivitamin pill. It's certainly not some big blob of gross vegetables that I don't want. I eat two delicious fruit snacks with my dinner every night. Mine, my favorite flavor, are the pomegranate berry. Highly recommend you try the super grapes as well. Go to getsuperbeets.com/Jesse. That's getsuperbeets.com/Jesse. When you do that, buy two bags. They'll give you the third for free. You can find me on social media at JesseKellyDC, on Twitter, Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Locals. And remember, 877-377-4373. We take phone calls as well. I'm going to take one real quick before I get back to my Mongol story. Steven in Springfield, what's going on, brother?
Hi, Jesse. I was shocked when I heard you with the Bezmenov video. I posted that on Facebook. I don't know how many times, like hardly any response. But anyway, unfortunately, I got to head back to work. But I just wanted to make one point really quick. I started studying Aristotelian logic because I feel that conservatives do not do a good enough job arguing against liberals because of hidden and implied premises. And Aristotle was very good at teaching people how to flush those out because it's the implied and the hidden premises that's the basis of the argument. And if you don't know what those are, unfortunately, I got to go, but I love your show, buddy.
Be good, my man. You know what? I'll tell you something, Chris. Aristotle reminds me of me. What, Chris? What? Back to our story. 877-377-4373, Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. San Francisco, congratulations. You're about to bail them out. The most insane city in the United States of America. You are going to write them a check. But back to our story. Sorry. I'm not getting distracted just yet. So the Mongols invade, they surround Shangyang, but they can't break it because Shangyang During that 4 years, they built a series of bridges that connected them to their twin city. Remember Fan Chang. Those are the only two names I'm giving you. No complaining. But they were constantly being resupplied from Fan Chang. The Mongols knew this. Remember, the army that's doing the sieging oftentimes has a supply problem as well. You see, you only have so much food and supplies around you. Think about this was about a 60,000-man Mongolian army. Think about how much food is required to feed 60,000 men three times a day prior to helos, river barges, trains. You have to have a lot of animals. That's right, Chris. Horses, Mongols, you know they had those. You're going to consume a lot. They had to figure out something. And they decided they were going to surround Fan Chang. They surround Fan Chang, and now they have both cities, both twin cities surrounded. But the situation is better because the cities aren't resupplying themselves now, but you're still not inside. You still can't get them out because the Chinese engineers were phenomenal. The Mongols by now had tons of their own Chinese engineers. They were just so good at that. So Kublai does something, again, the Mongols were so good at. He sets aside his pride. He sets aside his, I do things better, I'm Kublai Khan, I'm a Mongol. And he sends for reinforcements. What kind of reinforcements? Well, the Mongols had taken a lot of territory during their time, including Persia. The Persians probably had the best engineers in the world. This was at a point in history where Islam was so advanced education-wise and science-wise. And Genghis Khan knew this when he took over all this, and he would just suck up so much of that knowledge. Kublai just sends for a couple engineers from there. They show up, they take a look at Fan Chang, and they say to themselves, look, we'll knock down those walls for you. Just give us a little bit. Now, the city of Fan Chang knew they were in trouble. They actually tried at one point, to their credit, to storm out of the city. It's called Sally Forth or Sally Out. They sallied out to fight the Mongols, but you're not going to fight the Mongols out in the open. You're better off just staying in the city. They get their butts whipped, go back behind the walls, and soon these Persians have special catapults designed, and they're knocking down the walls of Fan Chang. They take it down. As soon as they take it down, they look over at Shangyang, the city they had originally surrounded. Shangyang promptly surrenders immediately. They surrender. The Mongols allow them to surrender on good terms. But that's not the end of our story here. The end of our story is this. Remember, this was always the goal, was to take these two cities and then get to the Song Dynasty capital. So when you're at the Song Dynasty capital, you can take it and then own all of China. Well, the Song Dynasty capital had been one the Mongols had visited several times, telling them, surrender, surrender, give up, surrender, surrender for good terms, surrender for good terms, give up, you better give up. And again, that Chinese arrogance kept coming into play. No, we are the Song Dynasty. We will never give up. We're better than you. We're better than you. Then they did. They looked down on the Mongols as these disgusting barbarians. As soon as those two cities fell, the person running the Song Dynasty, staying in the capital, reached out immediately. Immediately. It was actually a she at this point. It's a long story. Reached out immediately to the Mongols and said, hey, I'm actually all game for peace now. Totally game for peace. Let's do peace. The Mongols said, oh, no, no. Peace was yesterday. Now you're all going to die. There comes a time when your advanced society can get so arrogant that you lose sight of the fact there are people out there staring at you who want what's yours. We Americans are in the middle of this arrogance streak right now. We don't understand, because you and I are used to being number one in the world. America's number one, richest, most powerful, all these things. We don't understand how much the world watches us. When our president speaks, the world watches. And before I play you this, I want you to understand this. The world isn't always watching with this, oh, America the beautiful. I love America. They're not always watching with that mindset. Some are. Oh, I'd love to be an American. There are predators in this world. There are tyrants. There are barbarians in this world. And they watch when the American president speaks. They watch when American senators speak. You and I don't relate to that. You don't watch when a single other world leader speaks. You've never probably heard the voice of another world leader. That doesn't make you abnormal. You're just used to being number one. It's not like that in the rest of the world. When the United States president speaks, the world watches. And the monsters out there are tuning in and hearing the president of the United States of America sound like this.
I just want to thank you both. And I want to thank the former general. I keep calling him general, but the guy who runs that outfit over there. I want to make sure we thank the secretary for all he's done.
Hold on one second, Chris. Let me emphasize. He's talking about his defense secretary, Lloyd Austin, who is standing 4 feet away from him in the video, and, quote, that outfit over there is the Pentagon. Now listen to this again, and know the Chinese are watching. Vladimir Putin is watching. The Ayatollah in Iran, they're watching. Whatever scumbag is leading whatever scumbag country and wants to come kill you and take what's yours, they watch when they hear this.
Thank you both, and I want to thank the former general. I keep calling him general, but the guy who runs that outfit over there. I want to make sure we thank the secretary for all he's done to try to implement what we just talked about.
This cannot continue. I know you think I'm crazy. We need President Kamala Harris. This cannot continue. For our nation, this cannot continue. It can't. And you bailed out San Francisco. Did you know that? Oh, I'll tell you about it in just a second. You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. It's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches, because it really helps take that extra edge off. Get a jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
This is an iHeart podcast.